This episode was recorded live at the CIO Network. The event was curated by BCS as part of our corporate engagement work to support digital leaders. If you're looking to connect with your peers, shape the future of digital, and drive real impact in your organisation, visit www.bcs.org/employers. There you can find how BCS can support your goals.
This is the Gem of All Mechanisms podcast from BCS, the Charles Institute of IT. We've got here Bill Mitchell, OBE, BCS Influence Board Member, Leanna Allen, UK Head of AI at KPMG, Sean Rafter, Head of Curriculum Development, Data and AI at BPP. We're coming live from the BCS CIO Network, which just finished. So this is the afternoon slot now. Everybody's probably a little bit tired after their lunches. When you would normally be going to sleep, I'm going to sort of pit your brains for a bit more information. So I guess whoever wants to start, what stood out most to you from today's discussion or today's event? Can I go first, Leon?
Well, for me, I think what stood out is the clear views on, number one, we've got to make sure the strategy is right. Number two, we've got to focus on the workforce. And number three, there's a big focus on the trust around these solutions and tools. Yeah. So
those two. I think it probably just reinforced me kind of the breadth of challenge. It isn't just a data architecture. There's the ethical considerations, there's the impact to employment and et cetera, et cetera. So it was, I suppose, yeah, it's that broad breadth of challenge, which is going to be another challenge, I suppose.
And I think one of the things I was intrigued by, which I kind of knew, is that people are still struggling with how do you scale this stuff up to being a really enterprise-wide solution to something. And it felt like at the moment the approach in a lot of places is it's tinkering rather than thinking about how you make stuff happen. So I thought that was interesting. And it's not surprising because I think for a lot of organisations that is the case. You know, there's this amazing, phenomenal thing that feels like magic, but actually when you try and, you know, make it into something tangible that it affects the business model for your organisation, it's actually hard. Surprise, surprise.
Do you think there was a particular challenge or comment or anything that sort of made you think differently about any thoughts you had before you came into this, either from a fellow panelist or from the roundtable discussions?
It was Leanna, and I kind of mentioned it before around that. I'm obsessed with this. You have to have that solid foundation to efficiently move into artificial intelligence. And you're going to make mistakes, but to minimize the number of mistakes you've got. And actually, probably the more pragmatic view is do those things in parallel. So develop artificial intelligence, but also at the same time, kind of reinforce your data maturity and increase your kind of data maturity.
Yeah, I often talk about the word, it's like a fix forward method of trying to do this. So a lot of organizations are in a position where their data probably isn't in the right state it needs to be in. But rather than slowing down the transformation, include data into your transformation. So it's part of the process of transforming. And that way you've got one project to manage rather than thinking of data modernization as a separate program in its own right across an enterprise. So you're baking it into a business transformation that's going on. Okay, right. So whilst you're doing that, you're fixing your data, you're putting it into the appropriate frameworks, etc., whether that's data management, catalogues, lineage, etc.
One of the things I found interesting was that it sounds like, I mean, something I knew anyway and heard before, is that for lots of organisations, the understanding of what AI is and could do for you and your organisation varies hugely across the organisation. And one of the big issues that companies need to address, first of all, is getting some sort of common understanding of what it is they're trying to get out of this.
The Prime Minister recently described the UK as a values-driven tech partner, pledged $1 billion to scale AI infrastructure. What role do you think CIOs should play in ensuring this investment translates into real organisational impact and not just hype? Who wants to go first?
It's being honest with the government around where they feel that money can be best invested. I think it's that transparency bit. And I think there is just a general thing in the UK of wanting the legislators to work more closely with business. I think that's probably the key bit for me.
That was the point I was going to make. It's 100% collaboration. So ensure that the CIOs are collaborating with the government on this journey. Don't expect the government to, they're popping up the funds and the money to do this, but they need support, and they need support from the stakeholders and the infrastructure around them in terms of the networks to make that successful.
There was a comment that you made, actually, was that must have been in the panel. I think you talked about sort of edge computing and sort of perhaps a move away from reliance on data centres, and perhaps that almost that data centre funding becoming misdirected in a way that perhaps is that sort of an example there where government are thinking we must invest in this, but they perhaps don't have the full techno how to.
I mean, no one's got a crystal ball. No one can foresee exactly how these types of things go. But I suppose when you look elsewhere in business for almost kind of synergies, maybe you look at Agile and Waterfall, and there was a big push for everything you do must be Agile. But actually, most companies have kind of settled on a hybridized position. So it's not to say that data centers wouldn't be a sensible investment. We just need to be cognizant of the fact that for everything in computing, the chips become smaller, less power hungry, more capable.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that. And Microsoft have got GPUs, CPUs, now NPUs, neural processing units. We're starting to see AI compute come to the edge. So we want to be on that curve, not investing huge amounts of money on data center infrastructure that becomes defunct in 5 to 10 years.
Maybe it's slightly more than just an industrial strategy. Maybe this is part of the kind of integrated defense review, whereby there is a need for certain sovereign independence about your critical infrastructure, and they're seeing data centers as part of that critical infrastructure. And I could see then there's a logic in thinking we need to put money into this now because we're not getting into the political sphere. If you're not entirely sure about the reliability of some of your allies, then you might need your own capabilities in these areas.
I think this goes back to, although there is an overarching AI action plan as a strategy, it's really when you're going to get down to that level of detail below that strategy that things will start being planned appropriately. And I completely agree. It's I can't foresee it all being all of that money just going on one particular thing. I think building on that collaboration, bringing in the academics, bringing in businesses, bringing in other stakeholders to have that conversation where this is going, then I think there will be, you don't want to diversify too thinly because then you'll have no money to spend on anything, but then you'll be able to make sensible choices about what you're going after now, but then also what you're investing in for maybe the long term when things are changing and we are seeing traction in that direction. So what happens when, how are we going to invest in, let's say, both the nearshore, the onshore, the actual physical data centres versus the future where, let's say, we are going to start seeing more edge compute coming.
Maybe there's a wider kind of cultural thing within Britain around. I mean, the government, do we expect them to hedge their bets? And there'll be a little bit in data centres, there'll be a little bit of quantum, there'll be a little bit of kind of edge and stuff like that. That feels like that's kind of almost a traditional way that we've worked in British society. Do we maybe need to take a different view around that and just go, right, we'll go all in on quantum? And 90% of that £1 billion will go into quantum. And you know what? I don't know what the right answer to that is.
Yeah, it's good points there. We've heard a lot today about AI strategy. And obviously with strategy comes, I guess, a trust, getting people to actually trust in that strategy. CIOs actively build trust across their organizations, especially as they scale AI. How can CIOs actively build trust across their organizations, especially as they scale AI into everyday systems and decisions?
So on a panel, I spoke about forming those stakeholder groups. So then think about organisational trust, think about your employee trust, think about your customer or client trust, and then think about the regulatory trust, and depending on the sector that you're in. By breaking it up that way, it's not just purely the CEO that's accountable for this. You've got to then think about the responsibility. So when you are thinking about the organisational trust, then yes, that's when the CIO is going to be working in collaboration with the CDO, in some respects your CISO in other respects, because of the elements that need in place from a control point of view. But equally, you'll need your CHRO from a people point of view and your employee trust. That'll come down to some of the reskilling and upskilling needed. Then, of course, when you're thinking about the regulatory angle, then who's bringing in that CRO? So this is a full collaboration of responsibility. And if it's the CIO or others, you need to ensure that you're coordinating and in the collectiveness of each of the various controls on actions you're putting in place will build the trust in all the areas that are needed. It's not just technology trust. It needs to be across the board, and that's what will drive the organisational trust more broadly to scale.
You know, I don't think this stuff is stuff that business does all the time. I mean, how have you had trust in other processes before AI? In some senses, you wrap governance or performance management around it, and then AI is, to a certain extent, probably no different. You can wrap performance management process around AI. I think companies are probably wrestling with that challenge now in terms of how do you most effectively do that.
I was struck by a study that was published a few months ago, which they called The Ironies of Automation and How Companies Can Automate Themselves to Become Less Productive. And for AI, they were saying a lot of what's going on in the workplace, people are going from producing things to evaluating how AI has produced things. And the skills you need to evaluate whether or not the stuff you're getting from AI is very, very different from when you yourself just do it. So I think one of the things the CIOs can do is go across the organisation and go, look, you're all going to be moving from just, you know, like churning out a load of stuff to evaluating whether this thing has given you what you wanted to do. And that's a huge mind shift. It's a cultural shift. It needs a different way of thinking about what you're actually going to do in your day-to-day life.
Although just based on that, I do think about the trajectory of how certainly the generative AI tools, where they performed 3 years ago to where they are today. And if you think about that same trajectory in terms of the level of accuracy, I believe we probably should be getting into a position that these tools become more like software. So I think we have to get to a position where we're not expecting the breadth of our workforce to be the checkers and the evaluators of these tools. We have to get there at some point, because that whilst we're in this stage where they do need to check the outputs because of the still they're not 100% accurate, they're not designed to be 100% accurate. But whilst we're still in that stage, there's still a risk of human complacency as well. So if they are checking, then over time, if they've checked 10 times, whatever, and each time they're like, oh, it's been fine, they're going to be like, oh, it's going to be fine. I'll let that one go. And at that point, you're opening yourselves up to a much bigger risk as an organisation. So if these tools are really starting, obviously agentic solutions are embedded into the applications already today, then you are already starting to treat them as software. So I think that's the position we'll end up in.
Next question I've got here, the new 187 million Tech First program aims to train 1 million students in future jobs. How can business and education collaborate more effectively to build the talent pipelines we need quickly and responsibly?
I've sat on a couple of key Trailblazer groups, and they're the group. The idea of a Trailblazer group is to bring together endpoint assessment organisations, training organisations in industry together to develop apprenticeships. And it's fair to say, on every single Trailblazer I've been on, it is 90% endpoint assessment organisations, training providers, 10% employers. And trying to unpick why that is, there's a communication piece around that. There's a kind of knowledge and awareness piece around that. But there are mechanisms for business to interact and shape where skills and training goes. Whether they're not aware of it, whether they haven't got the time to do it or the resource to do it, I suppose we need to unpick why that is. And then I suppose broaden out those different mechanisms as well, because employers should be involved in every facet. We're in it together. We're trying to make our country more affluent so we can have better doctors, better roads, better all the manner of stuff. It's incumbent on us all to work together to fill these skills gaps, to kind of future-proof our workforces in our country, because it's in everybody's kind of needs. So a bit of a weird plea there. there are mechanisms, but we just need to be more communicative about it.
Some of the examples of those. So I work really closely with one of the Institute of Technologies, that actually is coming back as well. So the one in Milton Keynes, I support. And that naturally, the Milton Keynes College, which is part of that, does bring the local businesses in along with the learners within that college to ensure that they're getting the right skills. So the motto is very much on not just what you learn, but how you learn.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the things I've been working with the college is whilst they're focusing on whether that's digital cyber skills and ethics, which I've personally supported them on, how are you building in, we talked about soft skills earlier, whether we're allowed to call them those anymore, but how are we building in the skills that actually most organisations need, which is communication skills, business skills, along with that, so they've become these the individuals that go through, the learners go through these colleges, are more employable, not just from a, hey, I've got a tech certification, but actually I can really integrate into the newer world of business.
It stops that gap, doesn't it, between sort of education and then going into the world of business and finding out, you know, quite map with what's needed. You're actually getting businesses to kind of inform that education journey and sort of help steer it.
And I think education needs to become more flexible. We probably need to move towards shorter courses, more modular courses, stackable courses, and maybe not be as hemmed in by the traditional you do a GCSE or an A-level or an apprenticeship or degree, because they tend to, they're long burns, particularly in tech with AI. It's a short turnaround in terms of capability.
And they can be almost isolated in terms of they don't necessarily map to business requirements at the end of, at the end of that education journey. One thing that came through strongly today was sort of the, I suppose the speed of, you know, AI is obviously still a bit of a buzzword. There's a lot of hype around it, and certain businesses just think they've got to grab it and implement this thing called AI to do something they're not quite sure of yet. But it's bound to have some benefit because, you know, because everybody's doing it. So how can CIOs avoid getting swept up in a sort of a pressure for short-term results, but still sort of keep pace with competitive innovation? And again, just sort of really taking stock and coming back to that thing again of, you know, where there's a problem or there's a challenge that needs to be solved. The answer is not necessarily AI. It could be automation. It could be something else.
I mean, the simple answer is you do need a strategy about this. But most organisations are struggling on where to put the focus. And certainly if they're getting their hands tied in terms of releasing of any budgets, they have to evidence, naturally, a business case around that. So there needs to be that real purposeful, mindful approach to where you're going to, whether it's initially a pilot, but then how do you then scale and post that pilot and the purposeful lens of that. One approach, so you might not suit everyone, but one approach is to think about it from a workforce point of view. So taking particular roles, break those roles down into particular tasks, and then drive the level of where AI, generative AI more often than not, can automate parts of that journey. So or augment rather than fully automate at that time, to augment the person, the job in that place. Taking that lens, you can quite quickly identify where the biggest value is in terms of a function. So usually, again, corporate services, which most organisations are looking at. So I think giving them a directional travel and moving away from, we have hundreds of use cases, we don't know where to start, we don't know how to prioritise, we don't know what to go after, etc. That can be a good way. But you've got to get going. You can't sit there and fix the world first. You've got to start going within some skeleton guardrails, whatever you need in place. You don't have to have a fully fledged policy necessarily, but you have to have some basics about how you're going to operate and how you're going to start small, and then how do you iterate out or scale out from that position.
Okay. I think the thing I'd add to that is I think the CIO can be really useful in making sure decisions are based on evidence, not hype. and not scare stories either. You know, there's incredible potential, but you've got to do it right. It's not a quick fix. It's a set of very powerful tools which, when used in the right way, thoughtfully, meaningfully, deliver results. And the CIO is the person who can go, that's wrong. That's what you've just said there, that's mythology.
Yeah, I guess some of it does come down to having that confidence. I am the CIO, and I'm not going to get swept along with just because somebody's chomping at the bit to kind of let's get going. You've got to really take that from a sort of considered approach.
I just wonder about that. Does that necessitate then a strong analytics and research function within organisations? I suppose it does.
Well, we should have it. The thing this reminds me of so much, sorry, I'm the old person in the room. Back in the early noughties, you know, I worked for Motorola, and they were massively keen on outsourcing all their software development. And they thought, well, this is easy. We know what we build. You know, it's a mobile phone. We'll send it all off to these incredibly bright people in India. They're dirt cheap. They'll just do it like nobody's problem. So they sent off all these specifications and they got terrible stuff back. And it wasn't because the people in India weren't good. They were phenomenally good. The specifications, the requirements at every single level were incomplete, inconsistent, and in some cases just plain wrong. So funnily enough, however bright and clever you are, if you're given that and told to build a mobile phone, you will build something pretty bloody awful. And I suspect for a lot of companies now, they don't realise how much their own understanding of what they do is flawed. And they think, well, just give this to AI. Magic will happen.
It's actually quite a good follow-on question, really. Then, looking beyond the technology, what leadership mindsets or organisational shifts do you think we need to unlock the real value of AI at scale?
Well, the thing I really, sorry to jump in, that there was this wonderful survey done a few months ago, and it was across something like 800 organisations, and it was questions like, do you think your organisation has a strategy for AI? C-suite, 75% said yes. Knowledge workers, 40% said yeah. And you just think, so you just wonder how much there can be a tendency to be in this bubble where you think, well, we've all sat down and written this strategy down. We all know what our values are. We know where we're going and it's all going to be great. But nobody else in the organization actually has bought into this and understands it. So and yeah. I think one of the best things you can be doing right now at the moment is making sure you're actually going and talking to the people who are going to use this and find out what's actually happening and get out your bubble.
Yeah. Bottom up and top down approach.
I absolutely agree with that. I think the other area is to get out the mindset of how we've done this before in the past, in relation to thinking it's a digital transformation or another tech transformation. Yes, it is a tool, but it's absolutely fundamentally different to what's been done in the past. So you cannot look backwards and apply the same principles and rules and strategy around it. So I think that needs to be the shift in board and the exec level.
Okay. Finally, if you had one message for listeners to this podcast about where to focus next with AI, where would that be? What would that be?
Probably agentic, I suppose, is the stock answer. I do love robotics, though. I love the fact we probably will all have a robot in our home doing the laundry and emptying the dishwasher at 15 years, as long as the price point's right. But yeah, probably agentic is the place. And then there's large action models, large behavior models are kind of some of the natural evolutions of the language models we've got.
I 100% agree. I think agentic AI, but then I think we're going to start seeing the bringing together of other advanced tech, so blockchain with agentic AI solutions.
There'll be that sort of merger.
And then coupled with that, going back to the previous point we were talking about, so yes, we focus on so GPUs, CPUs, and then we've got LPUs, for example. Yeah. So where's that going? And then I think, exactly to your point, I think finally you are going to start, the trajectory is going to be AI in a physical world, which is actually more the robotic side.
I mean, if I'm in a business, I would be going, right, McKinsey said people are actually improving their earnings before interest and taxation, the ones who are good at analytical AI. I wonder if we can use analytical AI to actually make a shed load of money here in our organisation. And I really, really try hard to do that. I'll let everybody else make a complete pig's ear of agentic AI. Sorry, but I think they will. And then when they've figured out how to make it work, I'll go along and jump in on that one.
Good advice. Well, thank you, Bill, Leanne and Sean. And that concludes our Gemville Mechanisms podcast. I will join us next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.